York City. This is WBAI. Stay tuned for The Positive Mind with Armand DeMille.
This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. Tuesday through Thursday here at WBAI 99.5 FM in your dial. Bringing you food for thought, ideas, concepts, guests, make you think. Make you think a little bit so that the idea is that you will understand even better. Well, for the last week and a half, we have been focusing on male depression, on what men go through. And I tell you, it has unearthed a lot of feelings. Men have gotten very angry that we talk about a thing called male menopause or male depression. And I've been receiving many letters from people. I've received letters from women who say, oh, we're so grateful you're finally talking to men and letting them know what could be going on for them. And the men have, not all, but many have gotten just plain angry at me. I've lost some audience. But I want to get them back because I want them to understand, because I think if they understand their own depression and that they are depressed, perhaps they'll learn a little bit. You know, knowing that you're depressed is a big deal. People come to consult with me, and after a while, I have to do what's called a diagnostic evaluation. Now, that's what I do, diagnostic evaluations. Now, a person comes in, and their mood may be bad. You know, they may be in a bad mood. I have to kind of figure out what's going on. And my job is not just to come up with something simplistic like, you are depressed. That's not the idea. The idea, my job, and the job of all mental health professionals, is to figure out what is this really? You know, is it just depression? So I want to help you with that by helping you understand a little more about it today. You know, the difference between the people who go to school and the people who don't go to school, who are call themselves therapists and healers, the big difference is that in education they teach you. They teach you about the differences between certain things. So very often what might be easily missed by a lay therapist, because they never went through the structure of the school that forced them to learn things, you know, and they rejected it. They just said, no, I don't want to go to school. I don't need to go to school. I can just follow my gut. The danger is here that sometimes you miss certain things, like organic brain disorders. Someone comes to you and they complain about depression. One of the questions in your mind as a professional is, well, is this organically based? Now, if you're a nutritionist, you automatically assume it's organically based, but you don't think, is it psychologically based? So based on what you're selling and what you have to offer, you very often interpret. My job is to interpret. Let's take a look at just depression. When you see depression, we try to distinguish between what's called dysphoria and a depressive episode. We look at reactive depression versus chronic depression. Reactive depression is, you know, it just happened as a reaction to something. Chronic depression is it's been there a long time. We look at manic depressive disorders. And when we look at manic depressive disorders, which, you know, we suspect as a chemical base, although I suspect otherwise, when we see mania, is that part of manic depression? And is the person just in a cycle of mania? Or are they manic all the time? Or are they in a depressive phase? And is it just a phase of their manic depressive disorder? And if so, when does the cycle end? And what happens at the end of the cycle? That's for us to figure out, we therapists. There's another thing that's similar to that called a cyclothymic depression, and there's much more. There's a substance-induced depression. A person is taking drugs, you know. They get stoned all the time. A person who smokes too much marijuana, and I mean too much marijuana, can easily be depressed just from what's called a reserpine uptake. which has to do with a chemical reaction of the body to pick up reserpine, and can you or not, you know, feel stable, but sometimes that's inhibited. Sugar, insulin depressions. You know, diabetics are sometimes depressed. Thyroid reactions can make you depressed. Then there's the organic brain syndrome, which has to do with tumors and other things that might be going on in the brain itself, the physical brain. There's medical conditions that very often lead to depression, like Epstein-Barr. PMS, which is also called menstrual dysphoric disease or disorder. And on the other side of that, you know, male disorders, the male loss of testosterone can lead to depression. Therefore, I was bringing up this idea of male menopause. There's also low testosterone. There's diseases such as MS, multiple sclerosis, Parkinson's kind of depression, Huntington's disease, epilepsy, endocrine disorders, lupus, hypothyroidism, AIDS, and alcoholism all have as a part of it depression. Now here comes the question, the diagnostician, the person you go to seek, do they look at you and say, aha, your chi is imbalanced, or, you know, there's something wrong with your aura, or, and which may be true, by the way, but can they see? Can they see underneath? Well, that's what the good professional does. See, the idea of having a professional you could go to, and I don't believe too much in the professionals because I've seen some of the worst abuse among those who are the professionals because they feel like they have a license, like, you know, medical doctors. Give me a homeopath almost any time who has really gone to school and learned, not a self-styled homeopath. Give me a homeopathic physician, and hey, we've got something here now. Give me a physician who has gone through all the schooling and has abandoned it for Western medicine and said, I think I'll go the Eastern medicine way. Okay, as long as you have learned, as long as you're aware of what's going on. Too many people like to preach from a spot of not knowing, and there's a danger in it. They can't tell. They don't have the education. So when these are the people who, when a patient gets really funny or they really don't understand it or somebody kills themselves, they suddenly go running and saying, I don't know what I'm doing. You know, I should leave the business. I should leave town. Because they haven't been through the schooling that it takes. So schooling, what good does it do you? Well, it helps you look at depression. And why do we want to understand depression? Well, there are other factors. Now, we had a caller, yes, who got angry last week, clearly, but didn't say he was angry, who talked about environmental factors and social factors that lead to male depression. Yes. Yes, of course there are environmental factors that lead to depression. Of course, 9/11 itself. Many people fell into depression. Many men, for the first time in your lives, felt vulnerable. There was nothing they could do. They were in either complete denial, making believe nothing was wrong, and others became very depressed for a long period of time. Men don't like to be vulnerable. They don't like to feel powerless. They are trained, we are trained, to be able to exert our power and be strong. Societal depressions. There are some kind of environments like in Haiti. I spent some time in Haiti. Now there, if any place, you have enough excuse to be depressed all the time. The abject oppression is so horrendous that you can't imagine how a person can lift their head up. So here comes the question. How is it some people are depressed in Haiti and others aren't? How is it that some can keep their heads above it and still work and still keep things going, not just giving in, and others can't? And how is it that some people with the environmental factors, even 9/11, got through it with some kind of a decent attitude? How did Viktor Frankl, the psychologist in Auschwitz, maintain enough of an attitude that he could have been a physician to the other Jews who were in his Stalag, in the prison with him? How did he maintain his attitude? He wrote many books about it. So the question is, I think depression is something. It's something that's very difficult. There's one kind of depression where the person blames, it's called the blame the other guy depression. You know, and this is where you hold everything and everybody is responsible for your mood and your misery. This is a very typical dominant male kind of behavior. Blame the kids, blame the job, blame your wife, blame the city, blame the state, blame the country, blame God, blame the radio station. Blame everybody for your depression. Well, I don't think you should blame yourself. But it would be nice if you could be aware that the depression is really yours. What is it like to live with a man who is depressed? Many depressed men live alone. They live alone, they don't even know they're depressed. They live alone, they isolate themselves. These are types who usually call the doubters. Now, the doubters are interesting people because they are always standing back, living in their brains, not in touch with their feelings. They live an isolated life. They come out only sporadically. And what the doubters will do is they'll come out and they'll just shoot barbs at everybody, you know. You're wrong, you're a thief, you're wrong, you're a liar, you're no good, you know this, you know that. And then they go back to their caves. And the doubters, which is a lifestyle, it kind of engenders a depression or brings up a depression. And that depression grows over time. It's a combination of paranoia and depression. And this becomes, these are people who become specialists. They become specialists in things like computers, things they could do on their own. And they live alone. They don't have anybody living with them. Now, they may run into someone who allows them to be in isolation as much as they want. What's it like to live with a man who is depressed? What's it like? How about this? What's it like to have a mate, a husband, or if it's a homosexual relationship, a mate, a boyfriend, who is depressed? What's it like? Try to imagine what it's like to have a depressed husband. He's like a clod, you know? And I don't mean that in a pejorative way. He just won't move. You can't budge him. He just doesn't. He's depressed. He's down. You just can't pick him up. What's that like? Imagine the many people out there who are related to depressed husbands. It's amazing how many there are. Now, if you're a wife who's related to a depressed husband, it's much different, you know, than if you're a husband who's related to a depressed wife, because men are felt, you know, men have this ice, they're alone all by themselves, but women are kind of conditioned to hook up with a mate. And when you hook up with a mate, if he's not doing something really bad against you, if he's not beating you up or cheating on you or doing stuff like that, you tend to say, I'm going to stick with him through thick and thin. But a depressed man, it's like living with death. So how do you get him out of it? How do you say to him, hey, honey, you know, maybe you go look at this a little bit. Maybe you'll go check this out. Maybe you'll go see a doctor or a therapist or somebody. You know? Okay. Depressed men. Depressed men usually are not sexually very active. You know? They're usually kind of not interested. What's that like? What's it like to have a depressed father? Boy, when you're a kid and you got a father who's depressed, that is tough. That is tough because you feel responsible. Somehow you believe that you have the power somewhere to make him feel better. And some part of you always wants to take care of him, wants to try. And certainly if you're not good or if you feel disobedient or if you get reactive, you feel like a terrible kid. You know, you feel horrible. You just build a shell inside yourself and you want to spend the rest of your life pleasing somebody. You become a pleaser. What's it like having a son that's depressed? Now, let's say it's an adult son. Let's say you're a woman who's got a son or a man who's got a son and your son is depressed and just won't move and he's lethargic all the time. And so you're a dad, so you want to give him advice. You got to go out and get a job, and you got to go out and you got to do this, and you got to find yourself a wife, and you got to, but the kid's depressed. Not kid, it could be an adult child. Depressed. What's it like to have a son who commits suicide? Oof. We have a number of listeners who have had that experience out of their depression. Some people have children who have such a serious depression that, you know, when they come to see me, oh, he's just a little moody. But the depression's real serious and it's bordering on suicide. Now, what's it like to have a young son that's depressed and you can't talk to him? Boy, that's a thing. That makes you feel so powerless. It makes you feel so at fault that all you want to do is beat the kid up, which is what many people do. They see a depressed kid, they punish him. Well, we'll see if a little spanking brings you around. This is Armand DeMille. The topic today is male depression. Male different than female, because male tends to be that more of that idea of, you know, I am strong, that's hidden behind it, less of that vulnerability. The difference between male and female, which the male stuff that happens when a man feels powerless, when he's lost his job or something. Remember the difference. When a woman is depressed in general, and this is a generalization, I understand your objection to it, they blame themselves. But men tend to blame others. Men tend to feel angry, irritable, and they tend to inflate their egos. They tend to be suspicious and guarded. They tend to create conflicts. They tend to be overtly or covertly hostile. They tend to attack when they're being hurt. They seem to always demand respect from other people. They feel the world set them up for a fall. And they're compulsive, you know, about time. They sleep too little. They need control at all costs. Now, that's a more male way of going, you see. And some of you are there. Now, the real issue here is what happens to the women who are related to the men or the mates, not just women. Here's some of the stuff that they taught us in school. Let me just give you a couple of minutes of it. It's going to be interesting because we're going to explore this with you. Research criteria for depressive personality disorder. Now, you know, this is when a person is a pervasive pattern of depressive cognitions, I mean thoughts, and behaviors beginning in early adulthood and present in a variety of contexts, as indicated by five or more of the following. Usually the mood is dominated by dejection, gloominess, cheerlessness, joylessness, and unhappiness. You know anybody like that? Number two, the self-concept centers around beliefs of inadequacy, worthlessness, and low self-esteem. Number three, they're critical and blaming and derogatory towards themselves. They're brooding and given to worry. They're negativistic, critical, judgmental towards others, pessimistic, prone to feeling guilty or remorseful. Five out of those seven will kind of lead you to this is the kind of way it is. This is what's called a personality disorder, meaning you're stuck in it. People who tend to procrastinate, forget, stubborn, inefficient, you know, they can't seem to keep a job. So their best place is for them to kind of work by themselves if they could find that little niche. This is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind. We're talking about male depression because I want to hear from you. I want to get your calls. Number one, I start this off with an apology to Leora. Because last week someone called who I thought was Leora. Leora calls just about every week, and I thought it was she calling, and I asked her to be very brief, because sometimes Leora gets on and she tells us long stories, which are very valid, but I wanted to hear from a lot of people. Leora, that wasn't you, clearly, but I think somebody enjoyed me calling them by your name. 212-209-2900 is our number. Here's a question. Do you have anybody who is depressed in your life? What's it like? I want you to share it with the audience. I want you to talk to the people who are listening and say, here's what it's like to be with a man who's depressed, and here's how I deal with it. 212-209-2900 is our number. In a couple of seconds, we'll be taking your calls. Remember, male depression are different, you know, than classic symptoms, because men deny that they have a problem because they're supposed to be strong. Men deny that they have a problem with their sexuality and don't understand its relationship with depression. You know, and there are so many cover-ups for depression nowadays. There's Prozac and Viagra, right? You take both. You take both pills, and now you feel a little better, and you can have an erection, and it's like, that's good enough. What else do I care about? The fact that I can't talk to anybody, the fact that I can't have a relationship, it's all right. I'll just get by this way. The symptom cluster of male depression is not well known. so that family members, physicians, mental health professionals very often fail to recognize it. They fail to recognize that there is one kind of depression that I think is unique to men. And we're going to try talking about women at some point in the future, but certainly I feel more comfortable addressing the men from a man point of view. Okay? 212-209-2900. I'm sure I'm going to unearth some anger here from men who want to fight with me about it, but it's all right. Guess that's what happens, eh? 212-209-2900. I'll take a call right now. Hi, this is Armand DeMille. You're on the air.
Hi. I'm not a man angry at you.
All right.
But you really touched on what I had. My father was very depressed, and it wasn't really recognized. He had his deportment was like gregarious and eccentric, but he had a really rough time, and I think it was an unacceptable in his culture too, because he was he's Greek, Mediterranean, and we had some shame in the family, so it. He just would sleep all day on Saturdays. He would drink, and he's passed away now. God bless him, you know. God bless him for passing away. Well, actually, I've had a conflict. It's like someone doesn't really die when you have that mixed feeling of, you know, that you're upset. And he was very forceful. My other siblings left the home, and he was extremely strict with me and brooding, and it was just a really tough.
Did you feel responsible for him?
Yeah, I did. I felt sorry, and I thought I couldn't do anything, and I shut down because his ways were so backward. He was from an older culture, and he would have a temper tantrum if I just said, "Oh, Dad, that's your time." He had like 3 hours of walking back in the hallway, slamming the doors, and. And nobody, the other siblings left the house. He was a custodial father. My mother was institutionalized. He tried to keep us as much together as he could. But it was so hard on him. I knew he always wanted to put up a front. He had his friends over, and I would bring out food. He always cook all day, and it was really tough. It was really tough because he knew
he was his boss. So in a way, you were his mate, you know?
Well, my sister considers herself. She was the oldest. She said even like she was the wife, the mother, the this, the that. You know, she was very obsessed.
So how did you do with
sort of better?
How did you do with relationships?
Pardon?
How did you do with relationships later on?
Impossible, because he didn't want me to date. I had to be home by 9 o'clock until I was 18 years old.
No, but I mean after you left.
After I left, he passed away, and I left. But I had the feeling still that I didn't really talk to my father. I didn't let him know. He steamed open a lover's letter once. And
no, but I mean after you left and you're no longer at home with him, did you ever find any relationships?
Yeah, it's been a long time since he's passed away and I left. I left when, like 30 years now.
Yeah.
30 years ago.
And how are you doing in relationships since he left? Since you left.
Impossible. I can't fall in love with anyone. I don't know. And also, I adopted the depression. My depression manifests in sleeping a lot and avoiding people if I have people around me, I put on a face that I don't want them to see.
Just like your daddy, huh?
Yeah.
So are you going to break out of this? Are you going to change it? What do you intend to do about it?
Well, I've been thinking about that for a long time. It's tough because I'm in therapy now and I've started to go on a different bend of analysis, and I've shut the door on it a long time.
How long
really
have you been
time.
In therapy?
Well, this one particular therapist for 4 years, but we weren't in this line. We weren't covering up history. In fact, she had some forms to do, and she said, "Now let's talk about history." And I got so furious. Is this 4 years later? Because it's more like not cognitive or something else. It is.
Yeah, it sounds like you need something that's a lot more dynamic to get you out of it. I haven't seen depression. If depression doesn't move in 4 years, it could be either it's very, very serious, you know, which is so serious that almost nothing will move it. But usually I find that a more active therapy works a lot better, one that gets you more into your body or your, you know, more into a bioenergetics or gestalt therapy or something like that, which gets you more active rather than a thinking process, because you sound like a ruminator, you know, you sound like somebody who thinks too much.
Yeah, I...
And so thinking,
I do, and you hit that on right at the nail on the head, because I've been thinking I can't take the therapy anymore. I'm busting out. I'm getting angry.
You need a different kind. Well, you see, wait. Now the therapy may be working. If you're busting out and you're getting angry, now it may be working. So go to your therapist, and if you can, tell them you're angry. And if the therapist is worth their salt, they will welcome the anger.
Uh-huh.
If the therapist is not worth their salt, they're going to put you down for being angry. So what
that's almost happened.
Yeah,
like that.
So it's a great,
a very cool approach to it.
No. We've got to welcome your anger, because that means that the stuff is working. Because anger is the other side of depression. See, so you could be getting better right at the moment. Take your therapist on. Tell her I said so. Say I spoke to Armand DeMille, and he said that you should be welcoming my
he
anger.
He just called when your show started, and I said, no, I can't talk to you now. I'm listening to the radio.
She called you.
Yeah, well, I was going to cancel tomorrow's appointment because I was furious from last week.
Go to that appointment. Tell her how furious you are.
There's
and
something
you are
like, well, you can't be so bad. You were nurtured when you were young. You were. Your mother said she breastfed you. There's the evidence. It's like, don't bother me with this.
Good. Go in there. Maybe this person is a better therapist than we know. Yeah, I know. And she may be a great therapist because she got you furious.
Oh.
Go
that's
in there.
That's going to work.
Yeah, it may work. I'm giving her a lot more credit than I think she deserves, but I'm going to give her the benefit of the doubt. Benefit of the doubt, she's a genius. And in her genius self, she has gotten you to finally be angry. Don't quit. Go in there. Say, I'm angry with you, and here's why, and I'm going to stick to my guns, and have her respond to you and not put you down, and you stick with it. You'll feel a million times better. But be prepared for one thing, the one thing nobody understands about depression. The enemy of depression, the reason people are depressed, keep in mind, just think that word depressed, right, to push down, is because they hate being nervous. They hate anxiety. When depression lifts, when you start getting better, this is what happens. You feel angry, and then you feel anxious. And the anxiety is like life coming back to you. It's like life flooding your system again. Now, a therapist who is really good says to you, you know, you've been depressed a long time and your depression is starting to lift, so I want you to know you're going to be feeling this feeling that's going to feel like anxiety. When you feel it, instead of getting upset about it or looking to medicate it with Valium or something, what I want you to really do is to take it in and live with it, sit with it, because that's part of the cure. That's life energy coming back to you. That's the light in the darkness.
Yeah, I would almost welcome that over the deadening part.
You would imagine that until it happens, because you'd see how your body is going to respond to it. But keep in mind, this happens, and with that in your mind, saying, oh, Armand said this is part of the good stuff, that's why I'm so nervous today. You sit with the nervousness, you let yourself be nervous, and the depression gives way. Remember, depression's a protector. It's in there to kind of take care of you. It's saying, let's go into the cave, because if we get out of the cave, people are going to hurt you.
You know so much.
Hey, I thank you for calling in. What's your name? What's your name?
Penny. Penny. You like the coin.
Hey, Penny, so send me an email. Let me know how this goes. I want to hear progress.
Okay.
All right?
Yeah.
It's Armand at brainlink.com.
Oh, I think I've heard this. Okay.
Yeah.
Armand at brainlink. Okay.
Thank you.
Super. Thank you. Right, bye.
Oh, good. That covered a whole bunch right there. A whole bunch of stuff, right? Enormous amount of information. Hey, if you wanted a copy of today's show, you'd call 800-575-0580. I'm going to play you, what am I going to play? I'm going to play you music. Relevant music, of course. Yeah, what's it like to love someone who's depressed? It's a toughie, huh? It's a toughie. Mm-hmm.
kiss for. Just a little bit more. In this game, people watch for free. There's no boundary, no coach, and no referee. It's just you and me. And the distance is getting wide. Pardon my saying, but you're supposed to be on my side for this great divide.
So it gets to be our feeling of responsibility that we have after a period of time. That's Jerry Smith in an album called, in a song called Just a Little Bit. Just a Little Bit by Jerry Smith. Male depression. So now our caller, Penny, tells us about her depression, which is similar to a father's depression, except her father is more grandiose. See, now depression can kind of work like that. Here's another theory. Interesting theory about depression. One is that all people have one of two choices. Either they believe they can get loved, or they don't believe they can get loved. The people who believe they can get loved tend to be grandiose. Grandiose mean they're out there, they're always trying. They're on the radio, doing radio shows. They are, you know, you can't be depressed and do a radio show. I mean, you can be depressed, but you don't last for long. They may give you a spot on something like WBAI where you do a program and you get on and you, well, today I want to present to you this important fact. You know, once you hear that, you kind of get dragged. You run away from it because you're afraid the radio is going to suck the energy out of your bones. So in order to do radio, you have to have energy. In order to have energy, you tend to have a certain amount of grandiosity. Grandiosity means I can do it. You know, you step up there, you step up to the thousands of people who are listening, and you say, here, I've got something worth saying. Grandiosity. Get up on a stage, I got something worth saying. Grandiosity. Get up on a stage and dance. I want you to see me dance. Grandiosity. I'm an actor. Grandiosity. I'm a poet. Grandiosity. I'm a writer. I write programs. Grandiosity. The belief that you could do and that you can get loved for it. You're going to get some kind of applause. That's one level. That's grandiosity. The other level is, no matter what I do, I'm not going to get loved. So you do, and you could be very efficient, and you could be a designer or an architect or stuff like that, and you work at it, and you work your little things, but behind it is this feeling that there is just nobody's going to love you no matter what. Not nobody. No, I take that back. Your parents aren't going to love you. Because even if someone beautiful, wonderful, gorgeous, firm, strong, perfect, loving, mentally healthy loves you, you reject it because it's the original love you're looking for. Depression. Men who get depressed and who stay single never get challenged. They're just there. The thing they hope for is somebody comes along who's a woman, who's a dominant woman, a strong woman, right? And she comes in and they say, and she says, come on, get up out of here. What's the matter with you? I'm taking you to the other. I knew a woman who was a therapist. She used to find depressed men, and she would command them. And she would command them. I mean, she'd go and she'd pick them up, and she'd say, all right, come on now, I'm taking you out today. And she would just kind of take them because she was trying to get married. Four times she got guys right to the altar, right to where they were going to get married. And then something happened very much at the last minute, sometimes within the last month, where the guys woke up and said, no, I'm not going to get married after all. But she used to just go out and hunt up the depressed one. How many of you hunt around for depressed guys? because they're easy to move around. You see, if you give them energy, they'll respond. A depressed person responds to a lot of energy. So men who are depressed tend to be attracted to people, men or women, who are energetic. Because they're like a rock, and they're looking for the energy of the electricity, you know, of those energetic people. Now, on the other hand, energetic people very often feel out of control. So they look for a rock. You know, they want something to be solid. And so when they see this rock, they say, hey, that rock could take all the energy I have to give. So I'm going to give that rock all my energy. And they feel like they have a recipient who will help reduce their energetic flow, which is sometimes frenzied. So depressed men are very often attracted to energetic women. Or they're attracted to people who are givers. You know, if it's not an energetic person, it could be energetic in giving. They give, 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 give. And a depressed man is like a sponge. He takes and he smiles, just like a daddy who smiles when he's depressed. And they smile a little bit. And you go, oh, good, he's receiving my love. You never get back. And this is not the fault of the depressed person. Depression's an illness. It is an illness. If you're an unhappy person, more often than you're a happy person, you're depressed. That's how easy it is. So if you're an unhappy person who's unhappy more than you're happy, you're depressed. If you're an unhappy person who's unhappy one-third of the time, you're still depressed. I don't know what the amount is that's allowable. But unhappiness, you know, there's very little reason for it, except for direct causes, you know. People dying, people leaving you, sadness is one thing. Depression is another. Armand DeMille here with you. WBAI's professional. 212-209-2900. We're bringing you ideas about male depression, which is distinctly different. Let's take a call. Hi, this is Armand DeMille. You're on the air.
Hello.
Hello.
Yeah, I'm the second-time caller.
Your first-time caller?
The second-time caller.
Second time. I thought I spoke to you
once before.
That's
okay.
Right. What's your
name? Yeah, I was, I'm Dean.
Dean, yes. Hello, Dean.
Yeah. So I was trying to say that, my depression, it came from a breakup of a friendship of a woman. And, I noticed that I couldn't get out of my bed. I was weak.
I remember that. We talked about that last week, Dean.
Yes.
Wasn't it last week?
Yes.
Yeah, so what's happened since, after you've spoken to me? What happened to your depression?
Well, I want to know, do depression, is a cure for it?
Yeah, you asked me the same thing last week. And yes, there is a cure for depression.
There's a cure for it?
Yeah, absolutely.
It can be cured, because I don't feel like the same person like I used to. I don't have that drive, the fire in me, like it's gone.
Yeah, I've almost never seen a depression that is incurable. There is one that is called a chronic depression that happens in very early childhood that sits in there like a tank. And nothing you do gets rid of it, and sometimes that requires medication. I really don't think medication is necessary. But yours is what's called a reactive depression and is absolutely curable.
Medication would take care of that?
I think you could find a therapist who would take care of it.
I have a therapist. She's good, and she talks to me, and she told me that she was depressed before because a friend of her died of AIDS. And I've been depressed for a couple months now, but it seems not. It's taking time to lift a little bit. Because you asked my question, when you asked the lady, the health depression was lifting, it seemed like there's energy trying to get back into me.
Yeah, do you feel that?
And yes, I feel like it's coming back a little bit, but I don't feel like the old Dean, you know, like I used to.
Well, Dean, sometimes when you suffer a loss, you walk around with a heavy heart for a very long time, but you don't have to be depressed. You can carry the weight of the sadness, you know? You can carry, be like, you know, like if you love something that dies, like a dog or a cat or someone, you know, and they die, you can still be, you don't have to be depressed, but you can still be sad. Sadness is different. You have been experiencing depression.
Right. But I'm a man, so, and most men try to hide the depression, but I was that I knew that I had it because I couldn't concentrate, I couldn't go in the shower, I couldn't do nothing.
Yeah.
And I felt really weak, and I told my therapist that, and she told me that depression is curable.
Sure.
You know, but like I said, when it could be cured, because I had a reactive depression, and she told me that it takes time, but sometimes I have suicidal thoughts sometimes because sure. I want to get a quick cure sometimes.
Yeah, so the answer is it does take time, because this thing that happened to you, it didn't happen in a vacuum. It happened because there was some stuff in your mind that was really waiting for this to happen. And without you even knowing it, it just kind of knocked out some information about you. You're going to learn about yourself, though, Dean. How old are you now?
36.
You've got a lifetime to go of happiness. You know? You give it a little time, and it's going to be okay. And I'm glad you recognize that energy is coming back. That's a good thing.
Right.
Thanks for calling in, Dean.
Okay.
Thank you. 212-209-2900. Good, Dean. It brings up some interesting issues. You see this thing about, is it curable? I once had a patient. We played a little game. He was depressed. I had two patients. I got two good stories. One was a guy who came in, and he was wealthy, and he had inherited a lot of money. And he said to me, David, and he said to me, I need to get a job. I said, why do you need a job? He said, because I stay in my house too long. So I said, how are we going to get you working? I said, because you're so depressed. He said, well, I just want to get a job. Tell me the steps to take to get a job. And he wanted behavior modification kind of stuff, which I also did in my life. So I was helping him get a job with a cab driver to start. You know, eventually, believe it or not, he became a psychotherapist. And his depression lifted. But before he did, I said to him, I said, well, the first thing we got to do is get rid of your depression. He said, oh, no, don't take away depression. My depression is my friend. He said, I want to get a job, that's all. Very interesting. He taught me something. Another young man, Arthur, I remember, came to me one day, and we were doing a little, call a role play exercise. You know, I said to him, imagine your depression's on this pillow. Any one of you out there can imagine doing this. I said, what do you want to say to this pillow? And you want to say, I hate you. He said, I hate you. He said to his depression, you kill me, you depress me, you keep me unhappy, I can't stand you, you cripple me, you won't let me love anybody. So I reached over and I said, well, let me take your depression from you. And I reached for the pillow and I went to grab it. And he grabbed it with such a vengeance. He grabbed it and he hung it and he said, leave it alone. Whew. Did you see that movie? What was that? Fear? One of the guys made believe he was a multiple personality. And suddenly this guy's character changed. And I said, oh, let me have that depression. And so I saw what was coming, so I did a mock role play. I did a role play with him, and I grabbed the pillow with my hand, and I pulled on it hard, and I said, give me your depression. He said, no, don't take my depression away from me. I said, give me that depression. He said, I will not give you my depression. I will not. I'll kill you first, he said. And I realized that even though people are depressed, they very often have a relationship to their depression. It becomes their mother. Depression itself becomes your safety zone. It becomes the place you hang out. You live depressed. It's like creating your own family. It's a mood. You're isolated. You're alone. So I realized you can't pull this depression away from people. The best thing you could do is show them that for a moment or two they could live without it. And then let them make a choice. You see, depression is like your landlord. I love these metaphors. You got a house. The house is you. And the depression is currently on the roof, making sure nobody comes in by helicopter. And it's in your basement, making sure nobody gets to your feelings. It's certainly at your front door, making sure nobody gets in to meet with you. It looks out your windows all the time, so it occupies all the spaces that look on the outside, checking, making sure nobody's going to get close to you. And there's nothing there that's dangerous. So the depression itself occupies many of the rooms of your house. The idea here is to say to it, look, I don't want to get rid of you completely, but I want you to take less space. Would you mind renting one of these apartments? Would you mind letting somebody go up on the roof and have a party? Would you let us just relinquish a little of your hold so you could see if we'll survive without you being as stringent, as strong as you are? So that's the deal we make with depression. Even though we may never even talk to the client about it, we're kind of saying, you know, to this spirit of depression, give me a break. I promise you, it'll be a choice. I won't rip it away from you. Now, you get a drug like Prozac or you get some of these chemicals that come along. Sometimes they're given when a person responds right away to them. You know, they say, oh, I feel better. I feel lighter. You know, life is a little more limited. I'm living in a little grayer range. I don't have all the big colors I used to have. I'm living in a smaller zone, but I'm happier. That's one. But other people will not respond. And these are the people who are dug in. They are dug into their depression. They are going to live inside that world. What's it like to be a depressive who's really living underground? The best description I ever heard, this is my goal one day, is to read a story on air. And just read you a story. The story, you're going to want to write this down, is by, they're going to call about this, Paul, you know. Franz Kafka. K-A-F-K-A, in his collected short stories, wrote a story called The Burrow, B-U-R-R-O-W, about an animal that lives underground and all the thinking that goes behind it. If you want to read a remarkable, incredible, fantastic description of what it's like to live that depressed life, read The Burrow. It's, and for professionals, it is one of the absolute best books. This best short story for professionals to understand the working of the mind that's depressed. 212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind, Tuesdays through Thursdays here at WBAI in New York City. I forgot to mention the incredible WBAI. Let's take another call. Hi, you're on the air.
Yes, sir. Hi.
Hi there.
Yes, sir. My name is Ralph Robinson. That's my English name. I'm quite in the United States. I'm from Nigeria. I'm a Hebrew. I'm a priest, also Rabbi Kwa Sanchi. That's my African name.
Wow.
I've been listening to you. Yes. I've been on a show one time with Jabel. He's from Senegal.
Sure, Jabel Faye, right.
Yes, sir. I've been, been on a show one time with Haile Selassie, when he spoke. And I've been listening to you for a long time, sir, and I find it very interesting. You're meant to have a very wide knowledge about a lot of things. This word depression, I'm so glad the way you defined it, because I will listen to you when it came on. You know, that's the way I tried to define this with my girlfriend. I've been having a lot of depressive mood and all kind of situation, and it affects me when I see her very unhappy. You say something to her, she cry every second, she cry about a little thing.
Mm.
But she's a very tough person in the other area. And this word depression, sir, when I was growing up in Nigeria and Lagos as a young boy before I came to this country, we didn't hear about none of these things until I came to this country about this depression, depression. And I think it has to do with a lot of background also. And over here for the men, taking myself an example, after living in this country for 32 years and have suffered the worst injustice, in the hands of a lot of European people, law firms, all kind of stuff, and I have not jumped off the cliff, nor have I taken any machine gun and start shooting people, whatever. I have conducted myself with the discipline I had from Nigeria. Now, I think depression, going by your definition in the beginning, because I do get depressed sometimes, but I don't let it get me down, which is lack of job, lack of income, lack of this, lack of that, lack of this. And this can cause a lot of depression, and especially if you have a family or a relationship in which you have no power, as you said, which is true. It's like you were speaking for me.
Yeah, I hear. But let me get you to one thing, because we're going to run out of time shortly. You did say that very important thing to me about you have this woman that you're related to who is depressed a lot. And
mm-hmm.
she is also angry, right? She's both mm-hmm. angry and depressed. It's an interesting thing, and I didn't mention it, and I'm glad you mentioned it. That's called an agitated depression. That's
yes,
the
sir.
Worst kind of depression in the world. Because
you
don't even have the comfort of being depressed. Now you're agitated and you're depressed. It's like having an electric grid underneath you. And
yes,
you,
sir, like an explosion.
Yes, and you are a man. When you have somebody with that kind of depression, they're like an emotional minefield, you know, they
mm-hmm.
they kind of blow up all of a sudden. Now, you as a man on the other side, you love this person, you love her, but you feel powerless, and that is
yes.
a terrible feeling for a man. I wish we guys could get over this feeling of being powerless and say, I'm powerless. and accept that we have no power sometimes, that it's not our responsibility and not our control. Because it sounds like that's what you do, Ralph, you know? Mm-hmm. You acknowledge the fact that you don't have power in this situation, but you understand, you know, you understand that you're dealing not with just her reaction to you, which may be partially, but really something inside her that's disturbing her. It's very tough, because I know, you know, I've known some Nigerian people, and it's funny, when you see depression, they're very kind of stoic about it, you know, they just kind of live with it, but they don't ever question it.
Yes. And the reason is, as a Nigerian or any African that comes from that continent, I've been here 32 years, so I'm speaking almost for everyone that comes there. As a Nigerian, we don't let, for example, if I come to your office to look for a job, and you deny me a job because I'm a black man or because I'm from social ethnic group, it doesn't depress me. That kind of thing does not depress us. I just say, hey, this man doesn't want to give me a job. I go somewhere else. But
right, because you learn not to get buried by that.
No.
No, sir. I understand.
Never. Never. Because if this was Nigeria, I know how to deal with this. That's my country. But if I come to your house and I want to, you say, no, you can't do it. I can't fight in your house. That's not my house. I go somewhere else so somebody will allow me to feel comfortable. You know, so my point is, depression, some people here take it as a real disease. It's not a disease whatsoever. I disagree with anyone in the world that says depression is a disease. It can be made to be a disease by if you're positioned in that way. It can be made to look like it's a disease. But I think it's something, if you're a spiritual person like me, I think you can overcome a lot of forces, external forces that are acting on you that will cause you to be a depressive person. I
hear you, Ralph, and I hear from your position, sir, I understand how you see that, because you've actually based your entire existence on that belief.
Yes,
thank you. Thank you for calling
thank
in.
You.
Thank you
very much, sir.
Sure.
Yes, sir.
So, you see, now there's Ralph brings up, I hate to call him Ralph, Jesus. I hate to call him Jesus, too. Hate to call him Ralph because that's his American name, right? What was that name? But he brings up another point, and this is a point of people who are not depressed. People who are not depressed look at depressed people and they say, you shouldn't be depressed. You see, it's almost as if people with migraine headaches look at people with migraine headaches and say, well, it's only a headache. People who have got, you know, dysmenorrhea. You know what that is? Those are those terrible cramps, menstrual cramps that make you die, right? Which no man in the world could really understand what it feels like. Give me a woman's migraine, a woman's menstrual cramps, and a woman's childbirth pain. There is nothing a man goes through that is anything like that, right? Nothing, unless your hip goes out or something. But you just don't know those pains. But when you see somebody who is in depression, you assume it's their fault and you have advice for them. Advising someone who's depressed does not work. It just gets them more depressed. Because they have their own words. They understand what's going on. It just doesn't work. But you do have to get some kind of attention. Hey, let's make sure we could get one more caller in here. 212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on the air. Hello there.
Hello, Armand.
Yes.
Yes, hi. My name is David, and I've listened to your show for a while, but it seems as though, I don't know, I guess I'm one of those folks that try to self-diagnose themselves. I listen to one of your shows, Psychopathy versus Psychosis. I listen to your show today on male depression, and I've been the kind of person that I think has been dealing with a lot of these issues for quite some time. As you said earlier, I just don't want to admit it. I don't want to acknowledge it. There's a part of me that says these things are necessary if you're going to be a successful business person. A man ought to feel this way. I don't know. I just thought I'd give you a call. You seem to know a great deal about what it is that you're talking about, and a lot of what you say seems to point directly to me.
Yeah, I hear, David. It's very tough. How long have you felt this kind of depression?
I would say since 94, 95.
What happened then?
Well, business took off, family life suffered, had a grandmother grow ill, then I had my mother grow ill, and then from there, divorce happened, and it's been a struggle. the struggle.
Have you seen anybody about this? Because, you know, I'm noticing the clock is ticking down and we've got to get off the air, and I want to talk to you more about it. Why don't you call my office and I'll talk to you about it, okay?
Yeah, give me 1 second. I'll get it.
Well, call the station and get the number, okay? But I want to talk more to you about it, and I am out of time because I promised them I would get off in enough time so that they could do their announcements, David. But it's a little more complicated than me giving you a fast, easy answer. There's more to it. I certainly will talk to you about it. Okay, now this is Armand DeMille with you at the Positive Mind. I'm sorry we had to cut that short, but I just looked at the clock, and we're trying to get off here on time for them to make as many public service announcements as they can. Those of us who care about the other folks who are working at the station. Hey, listen, how about a little cheery music? Yeah. Hey, so listen, if you want a copy of today's show, you call 800-575-0590. I will be back with you. I'll keep discussing this. 1-800-575-0580. What did I say, 90? That's the other guy's phone number. 1-800-575-0580. Send me an email, armand@brainlink.com. And in answer to all of your requests, I am still petitioning for that Monday reprogramming. If you have feelings about it, write the station. But I'm working on it. Okay, friends? Back with you tomorrow at 1 p.m.